Our texts for this morning are connected. If they're not exactly along the same themes, they definitely rhyme and have the same notions, but they come from very different contexts. The Psalms from a book of praise and the latter eras of the Israelite kingdom. And that's from Jeremiah, from an earlier phase, where he is speaking to a whole different scenario as Judah and Israel end up in exile. But you'll see the connections and the way that we lay out the sort of wisdom of the ages. This is what Jeremiah says in chapter 17, verses 5 through 10. Thus said the Lord, cursed is the one who trusts in humankind, who makes mere flesh their strength and turns their thoughts from the Lord. They shall be like a bush in the desert, which does not sense the coming of good. It is set in the scorched places of the wilderness, in barren land without inhabitant. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is in Yahweh alone. They shall be like a tree planted by the waters, sending forth its roots by a stream. It does not sense the coming of the heat. Its leaves are ever fresh. It has no care in a year of drought. It does not cease to yield fruit. Most devious is the heart. It is perverse. Who can fathom it? I, the Lord, probe the heart, search the mind, to repay everyone according to their ways with the proper fruit for their deeds. There's a certain evolution to our sense of the Old Testament. At least there is for me. Because, especially I think in the Anabaptist Church, we have a way of giving the highlight view and skipping over a lot of the other bits. You have the very beginning, the creation, the 6 days and resting on the seventh, and it is good. And then you have the playset with all the animals, which leads to Noah with the little ark that we can imagine the unimaginable. Then you jump to Moses and the action hero story, born in questionable circumstances, floated in a basket, came back crying, let my people go, and crossing the Red Sea. There's something about frogs falling from the sky that captures a young boy's imagination. Then there's the songs about Joshua fleeing the Battle of Jericho and Father Abraham there, some more for the accompanying motions to get some energy out than the actual lessons that they contain about the progeny or the sacking of great cities. Throw in a couple of psalms to memorize just because that's good, and a story of a giant fish swallowing a guy whole, and some prophetic quotations about doing justly, walking humbly, and that's most of how we do the Old Testament. It's there, it's presented as this more or less benign collection of allegories that we should go and do likewise and trust in it. No more particularly disturbing than the Brothers Grimm that we might read at bedtime. Only this happens to be real. But this notion and this idea doesn't really survive contact with the text itself. When you crack open the Old Testament, you quickly grasp that the rest of the story is a whole lot messier than we're inclined to think about or talk about. Jonah is running away, is swallowed by the fish to turn him around. To go back and do what he is least inclined to do and pronounce what God has ordained. Moses, as a leader, has an unseen penchant for ending every sentence that he utters in the ordinances of the law with, lest you die. As in, do this or else. The earth, created in beauty and harmony, becomes the scene of deceit, rape, murder, regardless of what happened with the apple off of the tree of good and evil. And God takes a bet with the evil powers to subject those who love him to the unendurable, just to see if they stay true, and test the servants with the destruction of their beloved firstborn before relenting. Even the heroes in the story are unsavory. David and his fitting to get his neighbor's wife. Abraham having children with the help just in case God happened to forget about what they were talking about. And that nice Noah story ending in a rainbow starts with a despairing God who's given up on creation, so literally flushes it. And all of this is the PG version. There's a darker side to the human character. It's in the Old Testament. And oftentimes we do spend some time with, yeah, that's there. That's real. But what do we do? How do we approach this, especially in light of Christ, who comes and changes everything? Do we embrace these words that are said to be our roots, our deep source of water in a parched land, in a parched time? Or do we skate around the sticky parts and just sort of think that they're not there? There's more than enough here to give them pause as you consider the stories of violence and how they fit into a concept of a loving God. And we've struggled with this literally from the very beginning of how do you integrate the Hebrew scriptures into the Christian reality. And I'll plead guilty to all of this. Every week in the lectionary, which is where we generally start in, so what do I talk about this week? You're given five options. The Old Testament, a Psalm, New Testament, and an Epistle. Sorry, four. And as you can tell, most of my time, I start with, okay, what does the Gospel have to say? I'll start there. And it's a bit of a discipline for me to always come back and find the first reading and to sit with it and to work with it and to present it honestly and well. Consciously or not, we can pit the Old and New Testament, the Yahweh of wrath versus the Jesus of compassion and love. And the logic is simple. Jesus came to satisfy the mean old man in the sky, and all the law and other nonsense could be done away with through him. And therefore, we don't need to worry about what came before. Even calling it the Old Testament tells us subtly what we really think about it. It's old, it's new, it's previous, it's ready, not quite ready for prime time, but we'll keep it around for nostalgia's sake. And we put Yahweh over here with a nasty law-bound reality, and Jesus over here, full of grace, hope, and peace, and say, well, they're connected, but we're not quite sure how. And even this worked for a little while. until you realize then that Jesus is not actually a Christian. The Jesus that we get in the gospel is not citing the New Testament text as he's writing it. The Jesus in the gospel is citing the Old Testament, the Hebrew text, and citing it a lot. This is his Bible, as we know it today, in all its blood-soaked glory. The New Testament quotes that expound upon the Hebrew text. Jesus quotes the Old Testament over 2,200 times. And he starts his ministry with the words of Isaiah and dies on the cross with the words of Psalm 22 on his lips. And in between, actively and persistently interprets the scriptures time and time again. The letter writers like Paul were all about the Old Testament and how it fits Jesus back into what has been into now what is. And Jesus is pointing not back to a broken system that needs to be burned to the ground, but rather to a present reality that is fulfilled in him and this present kingdom that he is now inaugurating. We are enriched by these texts as we understand the life and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, because they're indispensable for understanding it all. And knowing the context that grounds Christ's actions, his life, and his calling. To put it another way, these are the very roots of what it is to mean follow Jesus Christ. These are the seeds that get planted deeply and nourished well, and that can bring flower even in the worst times, the deepest challenge, or the greatest realities. Often when we read a text like Psalm 1 or this Jeremiah text, where we say, well, this is what this is, and this is who is good and this is who is bad, we take it as sort of coffee mug wisdom. Blessed are those who follow the way of the Lord. Cursed are those who do not. And seldom do we take the time to think, huh, I wonder where I belong in those categories. No. Usually we just sort of read that with yay and amen. Because we know that we are the righteous. We know that we are planted well. We know that we are rooted deeply. And yes, that is true. Always. But the conversation between that which roots us well and that which challenges us deeply is never one that is fully black and white. This or that. We know that that's true in ourselves. We know that that's true in our world. We know that that's true here. As I said in the beginning, Psalm 1 and the snippet of Jeremiah seem to answer the same question. What is the prescription for happiness? It is reliance on the word of the Lord. When one is rooted in the word, it is the root that sustains. Jeremiah is writing a critique here about the tactics of power brokers who are trying to find a way to deal with a Babylonian impending invasion by making shrewd alliances with the powers of the day rather than connecting with Yahweh God. The psalmist is imparting the wisdom of the ages as the way of happiness. But the advice is the same in any place. Know where you're rooted. Know how you are sustained. And from that sustaining force, your salvation will arise. And we must always come back to that. We must always see that time and again. Because we know that these images of rootedness and watered are very true. I'll always remember the first time that I arrived at Menno, way back in 2004. I had been driving across country with my friends who were moving to Portland, going back to their Willamette Valley home where they were raised after 3 years in AMBS in Elkhart. And we were driving down Rosenhoff Road, having shared the driving across country. And we crowned the hill, and I said, "So, over there, those trees, that's it." And they looked at me and laughed. Because it was just a little bit startling to them, and I'll admit to me, to sort of have, well, we're 5 miles out and we can see the church. And it's marked by what we know marks life around here. If there's water, there's growth. If there's not, then it's open. There's life to be sure, but it's a very different type. We know that here is deep roots and good growth and full display. These images made sense to us in ways that, frankly, didn't make sense to me all that much growing up in the ultra-lush Midwest and the overly wet. Being well-planted and firmly rooted in the way of God, as told in the New and Old Testaments, must always be tempered with knowing that just because we're rooted there, just because we know that this is our root of sustaining power and water and hope, does not mean that there won't be moments that will test our endurance. We are subject, all of us, to the realities of the world as it is. No matter where we find ourselves planted, the winds will come, the drought will continue, and the blizzards will blow. There's nothing in either text that would alter this from being the case. And there's nothing in life that would alter this either. The point of being rooted and grounded in the way of Yahweh and to celebrating the way of righteousness is not to declare our superiority and our presence and yes, we got it right, but rather to remind ourselves that no matter where we are in life, we are supported by something far beyond us, beyond our own power, beyond our own strength, beyond our own reality. It's in those times of challenge that we can rely on the deep roots that reach down to the life-giving reserves of the way of Yahweh, a way that is open to all if we can but reach for it. The water is not just for survival, but for new growth and hope and fruitfulness and challenge. We can recall that so long as our roots hold fast in the love of God, which has been from the very beginning, through all of the horrible stuff, and on down into today. No matter what the mess, we will never be left alone. We can rejoice in the times of challenge, not because we crave the satisfaction of achieving our way through them, but because we can trust God, who has been faithful through it all, and in the end, to us all. In the end, maybe we shouldn't be all that surprised by what we find when we read the Bible, by the stories that we find there. Because we know that the Bible stories that we find are stories of the world as it is. Warts and all, challenges and all, reality as it is. The Old Testament is a lot like today, just as violent, petulant, cranky, and treacherous as it ever was. The stories that we tell are just full of every evil, no matter what the time. Leaders fail in just spectacular ways, consequences for decisions and indecisions. Pride still leads us into war where thousands will be killed and maimed, just as it's trying to do so even today. The Bible is nothing if not a worldly book. But that by itself has to be tempered with what the point is. The Bible tells it as it is, but tells it as it fully is. Because no matter how messy, no matter how complicated, no matter how twisted, God keeps coming. God keeps showing up. God keeps being present to us, offering us nourishment, inviting us to root deeply. It's a story of God who reaches out time and again in love to the world. And we're told time and again that God keeps coming and redeeming and changing humanity into something new. The Old Testament may well remind us that there is bad in us, but it also must remind us that God remains all the same. And where God is, there too is love, hope, and peace. It is here that these promises invite us to seek the way of the Lord, where we can be rooted and grow and stretch and change into all that God is calling us to be. For it is God who gives the growth when we but trust the one who has been with us all along. Thanks be to God. Let's turn together to a familiar song. You'll find it at 514 in Voices Together. I Saw a Tree by the Riverside.